You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. This week it is Fanboy Versus The Flash, as we talk about what we think is an excellent issue of The Flash. That'll all be later in the show. What we're actually versing is Missing McFeely, because he is out this week. However,
and Triplett.
And Triplett is out this week as well, yes. So replacing them is going to be Brian and Melissa. They are here this week. So the three of us are going to be talking comics from this week. We're going to skip the news because there's a few bits of news, but we'll wait until we get McFeely back. We can talk a little bit of that. I know some people.
He's smart.
Because he's smart, we're not. Yes. In particular, I know the Neil Gaiman, Todd McFarlane ruling was this week, so I just don't want to get into that. Anyway, what we do want to do is talk about comics, because a ton of stuff came out this week. So, Melissa, why don't you get us rolling?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with American Vampire number 5, which is the continuing story of a couple of vampires here, and I've, you know, as I've said before, the premise is that, you know, vampires are affected when they're made by where they're made, just as much as who makes them, and so these American vampires can live for long periods of time underwater and survive. They can walk in sunlight. They're vulnerable at the new moon. You know, and so we're still kind of going through here with the feud between the new vampires and the old country vampires from like Europe, you know, Eastern Europe, that type of thing. And this one was pretty much about like, you know, I'm going to kill the person who turned me into a vampire. And that was about it. You know, there was the story about the 20s girl who came back and killed the people who made her vampire, or really attacked her, which ended up being turned into her being a vampire. And they had sort of this graphic scene here right in the beginning, at the very, like the second page of these old vampires, you know, talking about, oh, we're much better than everybody else, basically. But there's this graphic scene of this woman's body that's like hanging in chains. And it appears to be like there's her arms are cut off and her legs are cut off, and it appears to be, I'm not sure if it's like spouts so that maybe they're draining the blood. But aside from hanging there and then like one guy pushing the body towards the vampire that's coming to kill them, there was absolutely no point to it. So, you know, it was kind of like, okay, we're just gonna have gratuitous ick. And that was
that's a sign of a good comic right there.
Yeah, gratuitous ick.
just cut blood and gore for no reason.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and so, you know, we've got her killing the people that attacked her and then sort of going off into the, oh, and then she comes back and kills the girl that betrayed her. You know, they were like best friends and roommates, and this girl that she had roomed with had basically betrayed her to the vampires that had attacked her and kind of were the result of her turning. And so she goes back and kills her too. And then she just sort of walks off into the moonlight with her boyfriend, and that's the end of her story. And then we've got, the guy that actually, well, before the end of her story, we've got the guy that sort of saved her, that really turned her, because there were a group of these vampires that attacked her, and she was laying in the hospital dying, and there's a guy named Skinner Sweet, who was an Old West outlaw, basically, who had come in, and he actually turned her to save her, and so, but he had been turned by the same people, and so, you know, we've got him doing this sort of mysterious appearing, you know, I'll see you around type thing. She walks off into the moonlight with her boyfriend. And then we go back to Skinner Sweet's story a bit and tell about him. And really it was just a basic like, hi, I'm going to come back and kill my makers. And you know, that was pretty much it for most of the story. And so it wasn't very exciting. I'm hoping that it will get a little bit better from here. You know, and I recognize that we're still at number 5, you know, and so we're still sort of setting up the story, you know, for stuff to come later on. But this one just really was kind of disappointing.
Still by 5, you'd think it'd be...
You'd think it would be a little bit more interesting. But then Stephen King has done some writing in it, and he's always been really difficult for me to get into, you know? He does a lot of background stuff or something. I don't know. I've never really been able to pick up right away any of his stuff. So I'm not sure if he's continuing with the series. I think that I had read that he was sort of starting it and then kind of got the impression that he was then going to kind of turn it over to the rest of the team. So I'm not sure if we'll have different writers in the future and maybe it'll pick up a little bit. But yeah, so that was that one. Gratuitous violence and not much plot, so.
Sounds like a modern comic to me.
Yeah, so. The other one that I read was Wonder Woman 601, and this is, I guess, the start of the new storyline here, you know, and we've got the new costume and everything with the, you know, what I think, JD, you called it, like, the 90s punk biker sort of look, you know?
A little bit of everything, yeah.
Everything, and I guess it really is sort of a good place to start because it's with the new storyline and everything, and I know sort of what general public knows about Wonder Woman. I haven't, you know, been reading a whole lot of her, but we sort of start basically with the destruction of their home. Oh my God, I'm having a complete brain fart. What's the name of the place where they lived?
Paradise Island.
Thank you, Paradise Island.
Or Themyscira.
Thank you, yes. So we kind of start with Diana, Wonder Woman, and this other girl standing, you know, at the destruction, or I guess really they're they turn out to be in an alley, but they're sort of, you know, doing her little psychic, this other girl's psychic thing, and seeing the destruction of Paradise Island, and she shows Diana what happened to all the women that lived there and to her mother, and so, you know, and of course Diana's quite upset about what happened and is vowing to go kill them all. And then the girl that she's with, you know, makes note that after she shows Diana all this, she says, "The past you saw isn't the past that was. Something happened, and we have to put it right. Something changed." So, you know, apparently this isn't exactly, you know, with all the past that we've got from Wonder Woman, this is something different, and she's got to go figure out what has changed. She's being hunted by some unknown organization who – the people that killed all the women on Paradise Island. And, you know, and they're trying to find her and kill her especially, but all the survivors. And we end with her managing to sort of hitch a ride to Turkey, where there's a band of survivors that are waiting, you know, that are trying to fight, that are – you know, have been attacked and they're trying to fight. And so she's like come to save them. And that's about where we are. There's a few little flashbacks of her growing up and them talking about what she's going to be needing to do as, you know, the savior of her people, basically. And at one point in time on the journey over, she falls asleep and it looks like she dreams of the Wonder Woman that we know of, you know, the traditional outfit and in lots of girl power poses and everything. And you know, she wakes up and she says the dream again, you know, what does it mean? So apparently this is something that she's, you know, maybe remembering or I'm not entirely sure what, but well,
you weren't here for it last week. I don't think when we talked about that, J. Michael Straczynski is comparing this to the, Schrodinger's cat, where it's existing. Yeah. You know,
yes,
both,
I think I remember telling you that earlier this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I think it just seems like I'm being reaffirmed in the whole it's an Elseworlds without the Elseworlds title, where somehow it's in a Splinter universe and they have to set it right and it's just going to go back to what it was.
That's yeah, that seems like, about the direction that they're heading.
Which makes me want to read it even less, I guess.
You know. They've done that.
What's the point? Yeah. You know, I mean, he's essentially writing a story that he's telling you from the outset, we're going to put everything back. Don't worry. We're just pulling the toys out, and we're going to play with them, and then we're going to put them back. And then,
well, maybe he's telling us that, but he's not really going to do it, you know. Which
he doesn't
be...
have a choice. It's DC's choice, not his.
Well, that's true.
You know, they'll let him do it because they're trying to – I think they're trying to garner some interest for the line because I think they're really wanting to do that movie, and I just don't think they – feel like they have the support to do it right now, but I don't know. So nothing that you've told me, though, makes me think that this is, I mean, is it interesting at all, or is it just a lot of running?
It was semi-interesting, you know. There was good battle scenes. I liked the battle scenes. The way that she, the way that she manages to get to Turkey is she basically chases down the plane that the bad guys are flying out of and grabs a hold of it as it's taking off and hangs onto the plane for the flight. Which
doesn't she just fly?
Interesting and bizarre. Well, they said something about you know, this is where one of the spots where they go back, you know, to her training and you know, she says, I thought you said I can fly, and the response is, we did not say you can fly, only that in time you could fly, and in another time you did fly, and one day when the rest of your powers come in full force, you will fly.
So it's Wonder Woman Smallville?
What?
I guess, yeah, you know, and that's like the sort of flashback. You know, and she says, so what do I do in the meantime? And then we come back to Wonder Woman present on the plane, and the response is, try to stay close to the ground. So it appears that she still can't fly yet, I think. And then when she gets to Turkey and, you know, the plane is about to land but hasn't landed yet, she just jumps off it and like, dives into the ground. Basically, and it creates a big old crater and does this, you know, spiffy little voila stance at the bottom of it. But,
oh boy,
you know, it's
JMS have something against flying? I don't know. Is this
he's writing Superman? He better not,
but that's what I'm saying. His whole thing with Superman is called Grounded, and it's Superman walking across America.
That's
and
true.
Now Wonder Woman can't fly either,
apparently not.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to disagree, like, flying is overpowered, but on the other hand, most characters in the DC Universe can fly. So if you want to play...
Can't.
Well, okay, but I'm saying most, not all, obviously. Batman is awesome, and he's the exception.
Yeah.
Why isn't JMS
Flash
writing
can't.
Batman who can't fly? Well, Flash sort of can fly. He
no,
just
can't.
Has...
Well...
He can run really fast. He can run really fast.
He can do the fake thing where...
He's going so fast that air is almost solid to him, that he can sort of step on air, but he can't
right.
fly.
Exactly. But you say... I mean, it's... yes, okay.
Close enough.
Again, that's why I use the term most. But that being said...
Black Canary can't fly.
I swear to God! Point being... That
well,
no, if you're going to play...
Superman could fly, and now they can't.
Now they can't, yeah.
Very
well,
true.
It's not that they can't. They're just not. Superman's
no.
just not.
Superman's
and
not.
Wonder Woman can and could, but can't. What the
yes.
hell?
It's, yeah.
Okay. So that's great. So anything else, or is that your set?
That's pretty much it. That's
pretty
my
much
set.
It. Okay. So I have... three issues I'm going to pull out here. The first one's going to be a real quick. So if you listen to our show, New Soundwave, in the middle of the week, You know that I was the proud and happy recipient of a collector's edition for StarCraft II, which came this past week. I am, actually. I am really enjoying the single-player campaign. It's got a lot of nice little bits to it. The game is still progressing very nicely. So, yeah, I think I'm still pretty much happy. And I haven't, you know, made it through all the content and everything in the collector's edition. So, yeah, I'm still very happy with that. But one of the things that came in the box was the issue zero for a StarCraft comic. I don't know if Wildstorm is actually going to do this or if it's just something they wanted to include with the box set. But what it is a story. In the game, one of the new things that you have in the game is you can purchase mercenaries. So you basically put mercenaries on retainer. When you want to actually use them in the game, you have to have a particular building constructed, and then you have to pay a certain amount of minerals and resources in order to have them land and help you out. And then you get a certain number of specialized units, and they typically do extra damage and have extra health. So this comic follows one of those groups on one of their missions called the War Pigs. And they're a group of Marines that, you know, basically just get hired to do jobs, just like a group of mercenaries would. And, I mean, it's pretty pedestrian. For the most part, they go on a job, and of course one of them gets killed, and of course it's the woman who has a semi-love interest with one of the other guys on her team. So, otherwise, it wouldn't be of much note, except it was written by Simon Furman from Transformers lore. So, he does write other stuff. Who knew? I looked for Furmanisms, but I didn't see too many. Doesn't he always say something about there being no tomorrow or something like that? I think that one of those lines.
Was anyone hovering there like a vast bird of prey?
You know, that line may have actually been in there, but I don't think so. I didn't catch it. Like I said, I tried to note any Furmanisms. Of course, you know, none of the other, you know, four of the five War Pigs make it out, but of course all the other human Marines that they run into in this particular thing get killed, knives in the face and things like that. So, you know, that was Furman enough, because of course he has to kill somebody on the team. So, but anyway, I don't know if this is going to turn into, like I said, I'm not sure what the plan is on that, but that was Jim Lee, editorial director. And then the art was Federico Dalekin, a lot of letters I can't pronounce. So anyway, otherwise it was sort of interesting, but I just wanted to note that for those of you that didn't get the collector's edition. So on to more interesting things. You all are not reading Generation Lost, correct?
No, not. No.
That is too bad.
I have it. I just haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
I have it too, but I...
So this issue starts out basically where we were before. The team, the newly reformed Justice League International, has figured out that Max Lord is in checkmate, and they're all discussing what a futile effort it would be to attack checkmate. And I guess it's as they're standing around discussing whether or not they should go after Max, there's like a Captain Atom like finds a bomb of some sort, and he absorbs the energy from it and goes off into space to dispel the energy, because he said that it was basically a nuke, but there was something else weird about it. And then he spends the rest of the issue in what he thinks is the past, because it's all, you know, kids on a farm and, you know, 1800 style. You know, he can't, he's been hurled out of time, and because of the energy from the bomb, he can't fly or doesn't really have any of his powers. So he's kind of stuck there for a little while. And everything's fine. He's hanging out with his people on this farm until it gets to be dark. And when he looks outside, there's what looks like glowing rocks in the sky, which turns out to be chunks of the moon.
Wow.
So, yeah, like large portion of the moon is just broken off, and there's just large glowing orbs. So he starts questioning the guy, like, you know, what happened? Where is this? What year is it? Well, it turns out it's 2351, not the past. And all of the heroes, everyone's dead. And there's this old man, I guess it's the father of this guy where he's been staying at the house. And he says, well, you need to talk to Carrie. He says, you need to talk to Carrie. She can tell you, you know. You're obviously not from here, or you don't know what's going on, so, you know, you've spoken the forbidden names. Because he asks, you know, where's Superman, where are the Green Lanterns? And they get really scared, you know, and they talk about it like it's a religion. So they take him out to this dead area, which Nate realizes is radioactive, but no, you know, of course, no one really knows that. And he goes to meet this chick, Carrie, who is this old hag of a, you know, woman who's, like, old and disfigured and... She's blind, and he starts talking to her, and she recognizes his voice and says his name. She knows who it is, and it turns out it's Power Girl, and she's still alive. And somehow, basically what it turns out is Maxwell Lord did something that and unleashed a ton of kryptonite, killed all the heroes. And that's all in the future. So I don't know. I felt really odd about this issue because ultimately the story was really interesting. And of course, I always like to get a touch of the future and then bring it back into the story. But ultimately, the end of the issue left this at the same place at the beginning of the issue. So even though, so they've known they need to go after Maxwell Lord, and now they still know. That they
really
need to go
know
after.
They need to go
now they really know.
They really know it, yeah.
So I don't, you know, if it's like, if it would have been like something else was revealed about the story, I probably would have felt a lot better about it. It doesn't mean I don't like it. I mean, it certainly was was an interesting issue, but I don't know. I'm starting to get, I guess, maybe just a little bit concerned. Although they did make mention that something's happening to Captain Atom. He's changing somehow.
And like less suck or what?
I guess so. I mean, he talks about becoming less human. That like the human bits of him have started to dissipate. He's started to become more mechanical, more technical. It, you know, to what it sounds like, to be honest, is they're talking about him more and more like you would think of Dr. Manhattan. You know, which of course those characters are linked. I mean, those characters are linked because Dr. Manhattan was based on Captain Atom, but
that's true.
So,
but Dr. Manhattan is way actually no, he's not more awesome. He's also kind of crappy, but
he's also yeah crappy, but in a different way.
In a yeah, different way.
So I don't know. I just kind of felt like we learned what we already knew. We just learned it more so. So I don't know.
I don't mean the Dr. Manhattan thing. He's not really that crappy.
No,
sorry.
No. Watchmen fanatics will hurt you. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm joking. Watchmen's great. I've read it like 7 times.
Comedian. That's yeah.
Yeah. That's
great. I'm more partial to Night Owl 2, but that's just me.
Yeah, well that's probably
I'm a big fan.
He's the everyman.
Yeah, he's the Brian Kilby.
That's true.
Yeah, he's definitely the Brian Kilby out of that. Uh-huh. See, I liked Dr. Manhattan, but because I had gone through that like you know, fatalist phase. I kind of was partial to it, but anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to keep reading Generation Lost, but it was just, was good and bad. It was like, I felt really good right up until like the last few pages when I was like, oh, we were going to do that anyway. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, I was flipping through it here as you were talking about it, and I suppose as a bonus, you know, this old guy here that takes him out on the horse looks like Willie Nelson, so you have a little bit of a cameo here, maybe. I don't know.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That I was like, awesome. It's Willie Nelson!
He didn't offer him weed, though, so it's probably...
Bummer. I know,
if only. Which I'll end off with issue 54, Green Lantern Corps. So the story going along up until this point had been dealing with Alpha Lanterns assimilating people.
54? I think it's only 50.
I was like, what the heck?
I was like, whoa, 54.
Issue 50. I meant to say 50. I thought I said 50. I think I said something after that. But yes, 50.
Oh, maybe you meant issue 50 for Green Lantern.
Yes.
For Green Lantern.
For 50.
That's exactly what
Which
you meant.
Issue 50 for.
There we go.
FOR. Green Lantern Corps.
Okay.
Okay. Are we all.
You can talk now.
We're good now. Okie dokie. So, again, dealing with Green Lantern, Alpha Lanterns, assimilating people. And we kind of figured out or found out last issue that it was Hank Henshaw that had been doing all this, the Cyborg Superman. And in this issue, they decided it would be fun, instead of having him just tell the story, he mind links with Jon Stewart and just tells him everything and shows him.
And we get to see it.
And we get to see it, which is very exciting. Of course, we had thought that this character was dead, and he really wanted to be dead and wasn't.
Wasn't.
Nope.
Yeah. So, as is the nature of things in comic books.
I know. People can't die. But it turns out he's kind of dead anyway, because the Black Lanterns couldn't even see him.
Yeah.
And so they go through the whole deal where he was apparently hanging around for the Black Lanterns and ran into his family, and he was so sad. He's so emo. He's very emo. Was he always this emo? He's gotten very emo. I feel like he should be cutting himself. And
I think the emo thing is new. I think that's a Geoff Johns edition.
It's got to be, because it's just, man. He's worse
than Batman.
I mean, even like saying it like, you know, fleeting, more hopeless than ever, and, you know, like it took him like 3 years of wandering the galaxy, you know, before he realized he ended up home, and then he cut himself and listened to dark music, and, you know, it's like, what? Okay. So anyway, he's decided to inflict his pain on other people. I don't know. Well, the thing is, again, he's hooked up with this mysterious former guardian, I guess, which is pulling the strings in all these Green Lantern issues. And apparently that dude or person has told him that he needs to steal Ganthet. So I don't know what's up with that. Which is what he's doing, apparently.
Yeah.
And they're on a planet with robots. So it's all very exciting. It's setting up, but not a lot really going on other than just the background for why the hell Hank Henshaw is still alive. And
I wish I was on a planet with robots. Superman.
It would be excellent.
It kind of would be, yeah.
And he's also got his own power battery now, so that's exciting.
Sweet. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it does not. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so there you go. Brian?
Well, okay, I read quite a few things. I read Darkwing Duck number 2.
Awesome.
Which was excellent. You know, it's not like a masterpiece of storytelling, but reading it, it's like, wow, this is Darkwing Duck, but it's not moving. Usually these comic adaptions are stilted and hackneyed, kind of like the Dreamwave Transformers comic. It like has nothing to do with the original source material, but it's really good. I don't really want to go too much into the story, because I really can't tell you much what happened without spoiling it. And I'll just say that it looks and feels like Darkwing Duck, and it's now an ongoing series, no longer just a mini, so that's excellent.
Yay.
Yeah. Let's see here. So no one read that. Anyone read Green Lantern 56?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Read that.
Did I read
Hector Hammond, yep.
Yeah, so yes. I'll just say this. I had to catch up on Green Lantern. I was an issue back. So I read 55, which was the Lobo issue. And the end of 55 was excellent. The Dex Star backup story was awesome. If people just, like, don't read backup stories, you need to read it, because it's – I don't know. It just really worked for me. I really like that. But this basically issue featured Hector Hammond – or whatever his name is. That's it. Yeah. So he was trying to obtain the power of the Orange Lantern, which is however you say his name.
You mean the avatar or whatever?
The avatar.
Yeah. So because of course his life sucks and Ophidian. He just wants because his life sucks and he just wants something other than to sit around in prison all day and be raped. So he's not. I'm just kidding. No one would want to rape that.
Oh God.
the giant head and all that, just unappealing entirely. Maybe there's one guy, but probably not. So the whole issue just really nothing happened in this issue worth reading. It's like, oh, so basically Green Lantern's gone to the Styx because he's looking for what's his face because he needs something or other. Yay. And then and Hector Hammond stood up at the end. Oh God, this issue is not worth reading. So what's the cover on it? $3? $3.70? What is it?
It's $2.99.
It's too much. It's too much.
You think so?
For this issue, yeah.
What about all the Lars Flea stuff? Come on, that guy's awesome.
Lars Flea's in Santa Claus.
He was trying to bring Santa Claus in.
That was giving him stuff.
I did like that, but as far I like books where stuff happens, where it's like I go from one place to the other in the book, and it's like nothing really happened. We didn't get much farther in this whole story about the Lanterns teaming up than we were at the beginning.
Well, the only thing, my only thing is that, again, we have this mysterious former guardian or whatever that's trying to take all the avatars of the rainbow or whatever. And the thing about Ophidian is Ophidian was bound to that lantern. So he was going to be not only, you know, easy to – he essentially wasn't much to worry about because he was guarded within the lantern. Well, now he's loose and merged with, you know, Hammond. So now he's out, and apparently he's not a very good dude to begin with. So it's like a triple problem. You got Hector Hammond, which hates Hal. You've got Ophidian out, and then you've got – the possibility is going to be captured by the third, and we don't know what bad things are going to happen when they capture all the avatars. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, I agree to the point that it's an in-between issue, but I can't diminish the awesomeness that is Lars Flea's, because, man.
Yeah, he's pretty
awesome. I did like where Hal was like, I hate to spoil it for you, but Santa Claus isn't real. Like, do you think I'm an idiot? It's like, yeah, the evidence that he's real is incontrovertible.
Yes.
that was kind of great.
It just art-wise, that field of just
junk was
and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that was fantastic. The art was top-notch. let's see here. Brilliant. Upon Triplet's recommendation, I read Action Comics 891 came out, which is Action Comics starring Lex Luthor. Really good stuff. This issue featured Lex Luthor battling Mr. Mind. And hopefully everyone out there knows who Mr. Mind is. He's a big psychic caterpillar. Yeah, oh. Superman villains are great. So basically, someone somewhere has like a hit, so to speak, out on Lex Luthor. Mr. Mind was trying to obtain Luthor. So he was building these psychic traps for Luthor. But Lex Luthor, being Lex Luthor, not only got out of the psychic traps, he turned them around and trapped Mr. Mind in his own mind. And it was just really neat. It's just, what intellectual traps can we put Lex Luthor in and watch him get out of them? That's basically the whole gist of the issue is Lex Luthor is smarter than you. At the end, he kicks Mr. Mind off the building, and he goes splat down on the concrete below. So, you know, it's not like earth-shattering or anything, but it's just fun reading. This is why I read comics, is just fun little things like this. Doesn't have to be a huge crossover. Doesn't have to, you know, speak to me at some deep emotional level. It just has to be fun. That's why I read comics. And this issue was fun. I'm really glad Triplett turned me on to it. I really had, after the books no longer featured Superman, I kind of wrote them off. But this is really good. Really, really good. So I would recommend everyone out there read that. Something I would not recommend that you read is Ultimate Avengers number 5. This thing is like completely lost. I don't even know what this book is about anymore. So we have Ghost Rider in this version. It's Johnny Blaze and some evil vice president Ghost Rider who they're battling it out in Washington, D.C., and the Ultimate Avengers are just sitting around the big, ginormous English black guy who you think is Luke Cage but isn't. Is out there with War Machine. They're fighting out in the street.
Can I stop you there? Okay. Yeah. Did you say Vice President Ghost Rider?
Yes.
I thought my brain, went to another planet. Okay. Yes. So let me get this straight. Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider, is fighting a Vice President Ghost Rider.
Yes.
With not Luke Cage standing around.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And they have this whole strange conversation between Hawkeye and the Punisher, talking about religion and the meaning of life and everything. It's bad. I mean, this is as bad as comics get. I mean, yeah, seriously. This is as bad as, say, Brian Michael Bendis' last arc on Daredevil, which is one of the worst comics I've ever read. This is up there with that. Please, try harder. Mark Miller is a great writer. He can write really engaging books. This is not one of them. It's really, really bad.
Dear God.
Yeah, and what's even worse, though, is the Jeff Loeb Ultimate Avengers book or the new Ultimates or whatever it's called. I tried to read issue 3. I really tried to. But I just couldn't really grasp the whole point of it. It was like, stuff's happening. The art's good. It's called this Frank Cho, but I can't really understand anything. So I stopped. Otherwise, I would have had an aneurysm. And I read Return of Bruce Wayne. Return of Bruce Wayne number 4.
Oh, a light. A light in your reading, sir.
Yes. Yeah. So Return of Bruce Wayne number 4 is pretty good. So Return of Bruce Wayne number 4 is the Wild West story. This is the one I think most people were interested in, or the pirate issue. But I think this one had the most potential because it also features
Jonah Hex,
yeah. So basically, in this issue, Vandal Savage has a hit out on Batman, Bruce. I guess he hasn't really said much of anything, so I'm just going to call him Batman. And because – did anyone else read this?
Yeah, we both read.
Yeah, we both did.
What was the point of the – he knew that he was coming for him, but the whole storytelling here isn't incredibly clear.
There's something about the box. There's something he's trying to bring about the end of the world, and the box is the key to the end of the world, and they think that opening the box – is going to cause the end of the world, and Savage is trying to bring about the end of the world and keep the stranger from getting the box before he opens it, I think.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, that's the best I could discern.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, that's about what it sounded like to me, too.
So in the issue, it's basically Bruce comes across some sort of descendant of What's-Her-Face that was in a previous issue, in the Salem Witch Trial issue. As her husband and son are being murdered by marauders.
And the dog.
Maybe. Unfortunately, Batman wasn't there quick enough to save the people and the dog, but he is going to wreak vengeance upon for them. So
they shot the kid in the face. I mean, come on.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. This is definitely not a kid. Not a book you want to get for your kids.
No.
Because one, they want to understand it. Two, kid gets shot in the face,
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't know that being a child would make much difference in that regard.
Here's the stuff about Grant Morrison stuff. Usually you don't understand it because it's mind warping. You know, it's like stuff where you sort of have to set back. It's kind of like learning calculus all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this doesn't make sense. Well, yeah, okay. I guess after 3 years of it, it makes sense. This just isn't clear. It's as clear as mud.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it's because the art's not like super consistent. The time period's jumping, it's not, it creates inconsistencies in the look. And just, it's not really fleshed out. But, if you're willing to accept that and you just want to see Batman, you know, wearing a cowboy hat, there you go. This is the issue.
Well, it does remind me a lot of, like, Pale Rider or, High Plains Drifter, where you have
the stranger coming out of
yeah,
nowhere.
Where you have the stranger coming out of nowhere, and they're not real clear on what the backstory is. I mean, you know enough to know internally what's going on to at least understand the action that's happening, but they're not necessarily laying out enough of the backstory for it to make sense. So I think in that sense it kind of works.
Yeah, so it's like Pale Rider. Instead of being a preacher, he's Batman.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Or being a ghost or whatever. I think he's a ghost. He's supposed to be a ghost in Pale Rider.
I don't know that it's ever explicitly. He's death. That's the whole point.
Right.
He's the Pale Rider. He's death. It's not that he's a ghost. He's just the force of nature that kills everything because he's Clint Eastwood. Unless I'm missing something.
I think I don't know, but I've heard interpretations that are that way. But yeah,
yeah, but yeah, this issue really it's okay. I didn't hate it. I had Jonah Hex and Batman.
There you go. Not really even working together, which was kind of
no. Jonah Hex shoots him in the gut.
Yeah,
and the only reason that he is able to shoot him in the gut when he tells him to draw, he already had his gun pulled.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
If it had been like an even thing, Batman, of course, would have knocked the gun from his hand. But Jonah Hex had his gun pulled already. So there you go. And Batman wakes up in the 1940s for the noir issue.
Yep.
Which I guess I really need to go into the whole Thomas Wayne thing. So what Thomas Wayne's like, a devil worshiper or something? He's like an ageless devil worshiper in the book. So it's sort of lending credence, I guess, to the Dr. Hurt story that, yeah, it's possible.
Is this supposed to be getting into the Batman R.E.P.? Because I never read that. But...
Well, a little bit. But it's mostly into the last issue of Batman and Robin.
Oh, okay.
So Thomas Wayne and Martha are running around. It book features them toward the end, building Wayne Manor after they sort of moved off from all this stuff in the Old West. Again, I may be missing something, but the book's just not entirely clear. But just from what I can tell, Thomas Wayne's been running around worshiping Satan and trying to do something with this box for the last at least 100 years. It's odd. He wants to kill himself in the book, too. He probably should have done that. That would have been kind of cool.
That would have helped out.
Yeah, it would have. And I think that's it as far as stuff that I think we're going to talk about Flash later.
I think we're done. It is time for Flash.
Oh, holy crap.
So, I know. No McFeely and Triplett, and we move right along.
Well, McFeely's just so darn great, and he's just so fun to listen to.
I know, and he's so damned knowledgeable. It's just,
yes.
So, Flash 4. Can I say again that I'm loving this? And I didn't want to. I know we kind of say that every time we talk about...
Oh, this is definitely something I wanted to hate because in my mind, Barry Allen is dead, should stay dead, should forever be dead. But darn it, this is so fun.
I know. It's like what it is. Here's the deal. Geoff Johns took a character and took the Flash who was, I think, everything that we think of him and everything that we thought he was. And Geoff Johns has been able to find the things that makes that character interesting, makes him unique and exciting, and pull it out and put it in a world in which that character can thrive. So, you know, I think that's why it works, because it's just, you know, and now we're getting into the realm that I like. which is the sort of very Greek style where it's like, this is your fate. Can you change it? You know, and that real test of a hero, you know, this is the world as it is that you created. Can you make it something that it's not? So, you know, we start out basically where we did from last issue with Captain Boomerang having escaped and sort of having it out with the Flash. And again, the Flash does a very Flash awesome thing. Not only saves these dudes on the helicopter, but also in the midst of fighting Captain Boomerang and then the future rogues, manages to like grab all of the exploding boomerangs out of the air and toss them into the drink before.
The best visual representation of the Flash's speed is from this issue is one of the dudes on the helicopter saying "Mayday, Mayday."
Mm-hmm.
He says "May." The Flash jumps up on, runs across the blade. Then grabs onto the blade, throws himself into the helicopter, grabs the guys, and jumps onto the same rooftop that he was just on, just as the guy says "day."
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing him run across the helicopter blade is just so wild and awesome. That's a little
– Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen them do that in The Flash, and that was pretty impressive. You know, Mark Waid wanted to focus too much on stuff like Wally outrunning electrons and things like that, and that's all well and good. But, you know, we don't really comprehend things at the microscopic level like that. We do comprehend helicopter blades.
Yeah.
So bravo, Geoff Johns.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a helicopter blade that's standing still enough to run across it like it's a plank, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah, exactly. Good call. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's just brilliant stuff. But I also like the grabbing the exploding boomerangs out of the air and managing to toss them into the canal or river or whatever before they exploded.
The only thing that was missing was him saving a cat from a tree.
I know. And I would have loved that, too.
Yes, that would have been great.
But we finally get – the future rogues had kind of made a mention of their jurisdiction was limited to – crimes committed against people from their time period. And we knew that Barry had apparently killed Mirror Monarch, who was from their time period. But again, it was never made, you know, of course, being the story and everything, it wasn't made clear why. And so there was a mention also, what was it, last issue? That they made some mention that, you know, there was Iris, and if they could just save her or do whatever, then, you know, they could stop everything from happening, but they weren't allowed to do that because that also wasn't in their jurisdiction.
That sucks, Ors.
Yeah. Stupid time stream continuity stuff. But anyway, one of them, what is his future name? What is the future rogue's name? I can't remember.
They just keep referring to him as Top.
I don't know who that guy is supposed to be. No. He decides that he's going to lay it out for Barry and probably put himself at risk for execution from what he said. That basically, this is just awesome, Mirror Master had set up, the previous Mirror Master, I guess, had set up connections to the Mirror Worlds. And that the current rogues were going to open up that access and thereby unleash a whole world of craziness, including Iris being possessed by one of them and turned into yet another awesome name, the Mirror Mistress.
Mirror Mistress, that's a great name, yeah.
And that would be one of his enemies. And that the only way to stop it would be to kill Mirror Master, and Barry ends up confusing Mirror Monarch with Mirror Master, and that's why he kills Mirror Monarch. So, very plausible, very reasonable set of events. Now has all been laid out for Barry. The question is, can he stop the rogues before they open up the Mirror Worlds? And if he can't, can he stop himself from killing Mirror Monarch?
And I bet he will.
And I bet he will, because he's Barry Allen. And if anybody can do it, he can. But it also lays out the question, you know what's...
Batman can do it.
Exactly.
Sorry.
But, of course, the last shot is the Rogues standing in front of, I guess, the...
In case the Flash returns, break glass.
Break glass. I love
that. That's so awesome. I actually heard McFeely. Mention that on the podcast before I actually read it. And I didn't care. It was just the greatest thing that I've ever heard. I love that.
Yeah. Oh my God. So it's you know, and it's just it's just right. It's just the right amount of, you know, here's what's going to happen. Maybe if he can prevent it, if he can't. You know, and then it really lays it out there. Like, are they really going to do it? Like, are they going to turn Iris into the Mirror Mistress? I don't know. It's exciting stuff. This is good comics. This is good stuff. And not only that, you get the backups again. You get flashbacks, which I think is really nice because, again, like, I'm not real familiar with Mirror Master. And to have, like, this little bit of backup, you know, with these flashbacks, it's nice. That lays it out for me.
Yeah, all you have to know is Mirror Master 3 snorted coke.
Nice.
A little bit at the end, yeah.
Nice. So, I love this. I love it. Love it. So, excellent.
Good stuff.
So, please go read that. If you're not reading The Flash, go back, pick up the other issues, and start reading it, because it's excellent stuff. So.
Well, I'm going to have to do that, too, because I've read number 4, but not 1, 2, or 3.
Definitely go back. It's worth it. It is well worth it. It's well worth the read. So, I think that's it. I think that's everything. Is there anything? Did we miss anything? Anything we wanted to talk about real quick before we...
Not really. Not really. Other than that, we miss McFeely.
We do miss McFeely and Triplett, of course. So hopefully we'll have.
Yeah, I see Triplett like every week. I miss McFeely.
Apparently he's in Portugal. We didn't ask last week, but it sounds like they're vacationing in Portugal, which sounds really awesome to like us Americans. But when you live in Europe, you know, going to Portugal is like going to Texas.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
it's, not really.
You know.
Is next weekend the auto assembly, or is it the weekend after?
I want to say it's the week after, because I thought he said it was 2 weeks.
Okay, so we'll have him coming next week then. But not you? Or am I misremembering that?
I don't know. At this point, I don't know. We are supposed to be moving our stuff starting Friday of this coming week. And then,
the help on Saturday.
So hopefully I'm hoping to have the computers and everything up and running by Friday, but I don't know. If something crazy happens and I don't, you know, of course you guys will have to go it without me, or I'll steal Melissa's computer or something. But
you can just call us on your phone.
I could do that.
Yeah.
No, don't. Please. Don't.
I could do it. I could get the headset for my PSP and do it over Wi-Fi. I don't know.
That would work. That actually wouldn't be that bad. Amy does RSC over her iPhone or iPod. So
I just have to find a Wi-Fi. So anyway, but I think we should be set up. We should be good to go. If I don't have internet connection, as soon as we get into the house, I'm going to die. So I can't go without my internet connection. I freak out. So
yeah, the last two times I moved, I lucked out and had internet connection before I actually moved in.
Nice.
And one of those times it was much faster at the new place, so I would drive to the new house to download crap so that I could have it at the old house.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, I have to go to my new house and set up some more stuff. So,
yay.
So thank you all for joining me, and thank you all of you out there for joining us. Again, I'll mention, please go to the website, tfradio.net. A couple of things, if you don't know and you're just listening to the show, we are going to start to do this show live. We typically record around 3:30 to 4 o'clock on Sundays, but if you're here by 3:30,
Central time.
Central time is when we start to record this show. And we are doing it live and with video. So if you wondered what it would look like to watch four fat guys and one woman talk about comic books, now you can know.
Triplett's actually not fat.
Triplett's not fat. I'm sorry. So,
he's actually in pretty decent shape.
I hate him now. That is true. In my mind, I look like the guys from 300, but in reality, I look like John Candy. So, a little different.
Actually, the guy who was Leonidas in 300 now looks like John Candy.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, he was the guy in that Bounty Hunter movie.
Huh.
Not that it matters.
No. Yeah. Anyway, that's exciting. Go to the website, check us out, please, if you would. If you see our tweets, if you see our message on Facebook, just do us a favor, share that out. At the very least, like us on Facebook. Remember, we do have a Dig account set up as well, so you can friend us there. You'll see all of our updates that come through there.
TF Radio.
And then, you know, TF Radio is the connection for all of that. And if you're on iTunes, I know some people are like, iTunes, but there's a lot of people who listen to us on iTunes. If you would, just take a few minutes, go on iTunes, leave a review for us there. Let us know what you think of the show. And, of course, you can always shoot us an email at crew@tfradio.net. We have other set up there. I don't know.
There's on the website, there's a form that works probably better as it hits everybody.
Okay. So there you go, tfradio.net. So anyway, just, you know, take half a second and do that. Just let us know how you're doing, because we're here for you. I mean, you know, we do it for us, but we record it.
For the glory.
You know, we're here for the glory, but we record it so that you all will listen to it, and it helps to know what you like and don't.
And the ladies.
Yes. And for all
the ladies. I don't do it for the ladies.
I know.
No. But in our head, you do. that's terrible. Good. Anyway, so that's it. That's our show. Thanks so much. Y'all have a great week, and please tune in next time when it will be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.